I'm Dream Queen. You're in the cab with me. Thanks for rolling. Right here on KMRD LP, Madrid, New Mexico. That LP stands for low power. Okay. And we are a community driven organization here. Everything is run by volunteers. If you would like to support our small station, please go over to KMRD.FM and then hit the button that's called support, and you can make a donation to help with our operating costs. Hey, and thank you, by the way. Attitude of gratitude. We would not be here without our listeners and sponsors. That's for doggone sure. All right. So we're going to continue our conversation in the book club. A Knock at Midnight, edited by Claiborne Carson and Peter Holleran. It is a collection of sermons from Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And this week we are talking about the drum major instinct. The introduction to this sermon was written by Reverend Robert M. Franklin. And I'm just going to touch on one point that the Reverend Franklin made. He was discussing Dr. King in the opening paragraph here, and he is saying that Dr. King characterized his life and public ministry as that of a drum major for justice. And before I get into the meat here, you know we love a definition. So some of you may ask, what exactly is a drum major anyway? And if we go on over to our very good friend Wikipedia and we look up drum major. A drum major in the military is the individual leading a military band or field unit, corps of drums, fanfare band, pipe band, or drum and bugle corps. It is an appointment, not a military rank. Military drum majors utilize a ceremonial mace for giving commands while marching. Many drum majors, particularly American or British-influenced ones, wear a sash that can carry embroidered badges of their home unit and battle honors. A pair of ceremonial drumsticks are often attached. Drum major is the leader of a military corps, right out in front. So, Dr. King, the basis for his sermon is the 10th chapter of Mark, beginning with the 35th verse of that chapter. Dr. King quotes whichever version of this great Bible that he has. And James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came unto him, saying, Master, we would that thou shouldst do for us whatever we shall desire. And he said unto them, what would ye that I should do for you? And they said unto him, grant unto us that we may sit one on thy right hand and the other on thy left hand in thy glory. But Jesus said unto them, ye know not what ye ask. Can ye drink of the cup that I drink of? And be baptized with the baptism that I am baptized with. And they said unto him, we can. And Jesus said unto them, ye shall indeed drink of the cup that I drink of, and with the baptism that I am baptized with all, shall ye be baptized. But to sit on my right hand and on my left hand is not mine to give, but it shall be given to them for whom it is prepared. And then Jesus goes on toward the end of that passage to say, but so shall it not be among you, but whosoever will be great among you shall be your servant. And whosoever of you will be the chiefest shall be servant of all. Okay? So what we're talking about here, the point is service. Dr. King goes on to say on page 170, now very quickly, we would automatically condemn James and John, and we would say that they were selfish. Why would they make such a selfish request? But before we condemn them too quickly, let us look calmly and honestly at ourselves, and we will discover that we too have those same basic desires for recognition, for importance. So they were asking Jesus, when you establish your kingdom, let one of us sit on the right and the other on the left hand of your throne. And I think this is important, again, as we are looking at Dr. King in this time of religious holy war, or a war, specifically the wars that we've been waging for almost a century in the Middle East. We want to talk about the United States' participation in the early world wars. Once we got on our feet as a nation, we were off to the races. I mean, even as we got here, what you mean we? Jada. Ain't no we when we talk about the colonization of America. It was a certain specific group of people. So once they set foot here, they got to killing. They got to killing, and they got to talking about discovery doctrines and manifest destiny and the promise of God. So under the government that we live right now is no stranger to holy war, entitlement, and colonization. And this is important because entitlement, manifest destiny, is the belief that certain people are endowed with the right to take what they can. But it's flawed. It's not a sustainable belief system. So Dr. King goes on for quite a while. This is quite a long sermon. And he talks about, in depth, all of our desires to be important, to surpass others, to achieve distinction, to lead the parade. King goes, Alfred Adler, the great psychoanalyst, contends that this is the dominant impulse. Sigmund Freud used to contend that sex was the dominant impulse, and Adler came with a new argument saying that this quest for recognition, this desire for attention, this desire for distinction is the basic impulse, the basic drive of human life, this drum major instinct. And I draw this back to bell hooks and All About Love. And King does go on in the next chapter about as we're born as children, even as we're conceived in the womb, and this is for me, we need care. We need our host, our mother, to properly nourish herself so that we may be nourished as a new life. Once we emerge, we are, for all intents and purposes, larva. Just a wet mass of helplessness, blindly dependent on our parent, on our caregiver, our guardian, to provide for us. And if they know not instinctively what to provide, we then learn to very quickly to cry, to have fits, to complain in order to receive what it is that we need for sustenance. And if these cries and characteristics aren't properly honed, we learn to use words. We learn to get certain things for ourselves. We provide as much as we can in adulthood for ourselves. We must do these things in order to be independent and healed. King says, now in adult life, we still have it and we really never get by it. We like to do something good. And, you know, we like to be praised for it. Now, If you don't believe that, then you just go on living life and you will discover very soon that you like to be praised. Everybody likes it, right? And somehow this warm glow we feel when we are praised or when our name is in print is something of a vitamin A to our ego. Nobody is unhappy when they are praised, even if they know they don't deserve it, and even if they don't believe it. So our desires go past food and clothing and shelter to the nourishment of our egos, the approval of our parents, the approval of our lovers. Our fear of loss, our fear of being left out often drives our egos, right? Drives us to wear these masks of composure that we were talking about in the first hour. Some of us have several. I think all of us have a few. Some of us, you go into the room and they decorate the wall as many hats or t-shirt collection or tennis shoe collection, you have masks. And you pick the one you want to wear out the door and maybe stuff a few in your bag for when you hit the streets. And all of our masks serve to protect who we really are in our quest for approval. And we bring it back to the Christ consciousness and the thing I think that was so appealing, is so appealing to many Christians, is Jesus' willingness to accept us all as we are. Come as you are. And that's what I think draws so many wounded beings to the foot of the cross. And if we look at this, it would explain how the system, the powers that be, the ones who are truly godless, run all of the states and the wars, how they're able to manipulate us through our wounds in the cloudiness of our lack of self-care and our lack of wisdom, but our search for acceptance, to be welcomed in, to be sat down at the table. We're willing to do grotesque things. Some people are willing to do grotesque things. Until you get to the heart of the consciousness, which is not an us and them, a Christian versus a Muslim, or a Christian versus a Jew, or a Jew versus a Christian, or a Hindu versus a Sikh, or a communist versus a Buddhist. It's about power. Those at the top only seek power. They use your spirituality to convince you of things. And that's why it's important to stay vigilant. We talk about capitalism and economy. Dr. King goes into those subjects as well. I'm going to use one of his lines to underscore what I just said. On page 172, now the presence of the drum major instinct is why so many people are joiners. You know, there are some people who just join everything. And it's really a quest for attention and recognition and importance. And they get names that give them that impression. So you get your groups and they become the grand patron. And the little fellow who is henpecked at home needs a chance to be the most worthy of the most worthy of something. It is the drum major impulse and longing that runs the gamut of human life. And we hear this a lot when we hear people talk about why they would join a gang or why they would join the military or a sorority or a fraternity, or any kind of the Grand Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. Any organization that is put together by, I will say, a masculine energy to dominate. So recently I was looking into the origins of Devi. That's the feminine divine. And Sadhguru put it into perspective of the divine masculine and feminine is not male and female. In the sexed incarnations that we have, that's all human, and it is contained in our humanness. So female is still derivative of male root. I'm not talking about male and female. I'm not talking about parts of the body or gender identity. I'm talking about energies, the masculine and the feminine, divine. And the fire, the forward fire, the idea, the first thought, the clearing to make way for the creation. And this is just me tipping on the iceberg here. The idea that we must have the creative energy that is the mother energy. It's culture. It's art. It's nurturance. It is all things growing. It is a sign of a fascist culture when the arts are stifled. Beauty keeps us soft. When we focus solely on the concrete sciences of splitting atoms, of the breaking down and tearing apart of things for their dissection, to figure out how does this thing work, this object, the tearing apart of an object, is put into the forward forefront, and the birth and creation and the gentle coaxing out of life is considered weak, soft, and diminished. You have a fascist culture that is really preoccupied with tearing apart. It's just something to think about. We need to combine the energies within each of us. We cannot cancel out art and culture and beauty and softness and the focus of fostering those things as we still, as soldiers of love, as Sade put it, as the warriors here to fight for peace, and the continued, I don't want to say proliferation, because that's a really, like, that we don't need any, like, billions more people, right? I don't think we need to proliferate that much more. However, we have been gifted with an opportunity on this earth, and it could be an opportunity that generations are afforded if we could just figure out how to take care of each other and the planet. We're going to go back to A Knock at Midnight, inspiration from the great sermons of Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. And we're in the middle, just about smack dab in the middle, of discussing the drum major instinct. And I'm right at page 176. What we've covered, Dr. King is talking about what happens when you don't harness the drum major instinct. This uncontrolled aspect of it is that it leads to snobbish exclusivism. And he owns, you know, being a member of a couple of fraternities and social clubs himself. And he's not speaking against them. He's just speaking toward the dangers of them. And that's really what all we can do, you know, not really trying to force anybody to become ascetic or, you know, any of these you know, to restrict yourself, but to expand your mind, expand your heart, expand your thought process. Not here to restrict you, just here to expand your mind. We covered that last week. Free your mind and your ass will follow. Some things on the onset can look like it's making you small, but it's actually giving you more room. More room. Because some of the things that we're attached to on this plane, in this country, under this regime, for the past 400-500 years or so, and I would say for the first peoples, it's been over 600 years, where we're dealing with a battle for our hearts and minds, a battle against conversion to a cannibalistic, destructive force. Dr. King, obviously, his home is the church. And he was saying that this exclusivism especially can happen in the church. And it's unfortunate. The church is the one place, he says, where a doctor ought to forget he's a doctor. The church is the one place where a PhD ought to forget that he's a PhD. And he goes on and on. When the church is true to its nature, it says, whosoever will come, let him come. And it is not supposed to satisfy the perverted uses of the drum major instinct. It's the one place where everybody should be the same, standing before a common master and savior, and a recognition grows out of this, that all men are brothers because they are children of a common father. Some of the world's religions understand that. When we seek to decolonize religion, and we get back to the core values of who is the human parent, who is the ultimate creator of life, whether you call it God or Allah or Shiva or Brahma or Yahweh or Ishtar, whatever, whoever, however, nature, life force, you know, there were so many words for earth, so many words for sky, so many words for sun, so many words for water, so many words for tree, and there are so many words for God. So we move forward in the sermon, and he touches so very interestingly. We go back to King's experiences in prison, in jail. I don't think he ever went to prison. He didn't go to prison. He went to jail. Sorry. We're going to say jail can be uglier than prison sometimes. You're sitting there. You don't know how long you're going to be there. You don't know if you're going to get a trial. You don't know if you're going to get a phone call. They have solitary confinement in jail. You have all of the perks of prison, but you don't have a sentence. You might not even have a lawyer. Your loved ones might not even know where you are. And that does graduate to people in prison where they get shuffled around the system and in and out of solitary, and their families have a hard time finding them. That's your life in the front in jail. Which jail? Which precinct? What's the charges? Am I under arrest? Just go in there and sit down. And so his stories from jail are so interesting to me, how he was able to maintain and be strong and not let fear and uncertainty overtake him. And he talks about the superiority complex that is related to the drum major instinct, and racism. King says on page 178, do you know that that a lot of the race problem grows out of the drum major instinct, a need that some people have to feel superior? a need that some people have to feel that they are first and to feel that their white skin ordained them to be first. And I will extend that. King, this is not in this chapter, but he does talk about black supremacy and other forms of supremacy, the mentality of supremacy, period. So I just want to put a pin in that. King goes on to say, the other day I always try to do a little converting when I'm in jail. And when we were in jail in Birmingham the other day, the white wardens and all enjoyed coming around the cell to talk about the race problem. And they were showing us where we were so wrong in demonstrating. They were showing us where segregation was so right. And they were showing us where intermarriage was so wrong. So I would get to preaching and we would get to talking calmly because they wanted to talk about it. And then we got down one day to the point. That was the second or third day, to talk about where they lived and how much they were earning. And when those brothers told me what they were earning, I said, now, you know what? You ought to be marching with us. You're just as poor as Negroes. And I said, you are put in the position of supporting your oppressor because through prejudice and blindness, you fail to see that the same forces that oppress Negroes in American society oppress poor white people. And all you are living on is the satisfaction of your skin being white and the drum major instinct of thinking that you are somebody big because you are white. And you're so poor, you can't send your children to school. You ought to be out here marching with every one of us every time we have a march. King goes on, now that's a fact, that the poor white has been put into this position where through blindness and prejudice, he is forced to support his oppressors. And the only thing he has going for him is the false feeling that he is superior because his skin is white. And he can hardly eat and make his ends meet week in and week out. New Mexico being such a state that is so underwritten by the prison industrial complex. It's a huge employer in this state. And I know people do what they got to do. And it's not just white guards. It's a lot of brown guards out there here. And when we talk about the military, it especially not just white veterans and soldiers, all colors join up for the benefit of being in the military, for the benefit of protecting Americans. You get supposedly a check, a roof over your head, food to eat. Now tell me this, would you fight for reasons that you don't understand if you weren't promised food, shelter, if you had to make the trade? You're not given a moral and ethical choice. And now we have the draft, y'all. Okay? They're reinstituting the draft. Check your news. We're here again. This ain't old. And that's one of the things about amnesia. America thrives on amnesia. That was yesterday. Vietnam was yesterday. That was my parents. That was my grandparents. Right? No, it's you here now. What are you going to do about it when you get that card in the mail? What are you going to do about it when they come for your children? Huh? And for what? Because the oppressive job of a soldier for these wars, as a officer to uphold unjust laws, the brotherhood of the beat down of the boys in blue, is what? A check? Because you got to feed your family. Just think about it. So, King says, Not only does this thing go into the racial struggle, it goes into the struggle between nations. And I would submit to you this morning that what is wrong in the world today is that the nations of the world are engaged in a bitter, colossal contest for supremacy. And if something doesn't happen to stop this trend, I'm sorely afraid that we won't be here to talk about Jesus Christ and about God and about brotherhood too many more years. If somebody doesn't bring an end to this suicidal thrust that we see in the world today, none of us are going to be around, because somebody's going to make the mistake through our senseless blunderings of dropping a nuclear bomb somewhere. And then another one is going to drop. And don't let anyone fool you. This can happen within a matter of seconds. They have 20 megaton bombs in Russia right now that can destroy a city as big as New York in 3 seconds, with everybody wiped away and every building. And we can do the same thing to Russia and China. But this is why we are drifting. And we are drifting there because nations are caught up with the drum major instinct. I must be first. I must be supreme. Our nation must rule the world. And I am sad to say that the nation in which we live is the supreme culprit. And I'm going to continue to say it to America because I love this country too much to see the drift that it has taken. I, however, contend that it's not a far drift, citizens. That's me speaking Dream Queen. Because like I said, 600 plus years ago, some people drifted here and began a war that never ended. It's not far for America to come, but what we have to do is pull ourselves back to our humanity and away from the consciousness of colonization. Dr. King says on page 180, God didn't call America to do what she's doing in the world right now. God didn't call America to engage in senseless, unjust war as the war in Vietnam, Palestine, anywhere. And we are criminals in that war. We've committed more war crimes almost than any nation in the world. And I'm going to continue to say it, and we won't stop it because of our pride and our arrogance as a nation. Period. Moving on. A Knock at Midnight, The Drum Major Instinct, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King says on page 181, let me rush to my conclusion because I want you to see what Jesus was really saying. What was the answer that Jesus gave these men? Okay. He said, in substance, oh, I see. You want to be first. You want to be great. You want to be important. You want to be significant. Well, you ought to be. If you're going to be my disciple, you must be. But he reordered priorities. And he said, yes, don't give up this instinct. It's a good instinct if you use it right. It's a good instinct if you don't distort it and pervert it. Don't give it up. Keep feeling the need for being important. Keep feeling the need for being first. But I want you to be first in love. I want you to be first in moral excellence. I want you to be first in generosity. That's what I want you to do. And he transformed the situation by giving a new definition of greatness. And you know how he said it? He said, now, brethren, I can't give you greatness. And really, I can't make you first. This is what Jesus said to James and John. You must earn it. True greatness comes not by favoritism, but by fitness. And the right hand and the left hand are not mine to give. They belong to those who are prepared. And so Jesus gave us a new norm of greatness. If you want to be important, wonderful. If you want to be recognized, wonderful. If you want to be great, wonderful. But recognize that he who is greatest among you shall be your servant. That is a new definition of greatness. Skipping down, he says, you don't need to make your subject and your verb agree to serve. You don't have to know about Plato and Aristotle to serve. You don't have to know Einstein's theory of relativity to serve. You don't have to know the second theory of thermodynamics and physics to serve. You only need a heart full of grace, a soul generated by love, and you can be that servant. Okay. So, drawing to my conclusion here, I call back to the chapter on All About Love, About Community by bell hooks on page 141. She says, moving from solitude into community heightens our capacity for fellowship with one another. Through fellowship, we can learn how to serve one another. Service is another dimension of communal love. Skipping down to the bottom of page 142, Hooks writes, the willingness to sacrifice is a necessary dimension of loving practice and living in community. None of us can have things our way all the time. Giving up something is one way we sustain a commitment to the collective well-being. Our willingness to make sacrifices reflects our awareness of interdependency. Mutual giving strengthens community. We are a global community. We just are. It's not just you and your folks and me and my folks, as P-Funk would say. It's all our folks. All right, my people. The last couple of words in this sermon, Dr. King is reminding us again of how he wants to be remembered when he passes. And he wrote, I want to be on your right side and your left side, not in terms of some political kingdom or ambition, but I just want to be there in love and in justice and in truth and in commitment to others so that we can make of this old world a new world. I thank everyone for listening. Not going to be here next week. I will be with you, but I won't be in this chair at this microphone. I appreciate you all so much. And I hope that you can be good to yourselves during this time. Good to yourselves. Because when you do that, you can be better to others. And we're all on this journey together, learning out loud. I appreciate everyone. Love you, bye.